Okay. Yeah, it's on, right? Yeah, so good afternoon. My name is Wei Jing. For the past 10 years, I've been working with MRI, doing scans and some hardware, modifications here and there. So when Dr. Nachman said there's the opportunity for me to give an introduction talk, I jumped for this opportunity. And so the talk today is about the introduction to practical MRI scanning. And just for a quick survey, how many of you guys here have already, done MRI or conducted MRI scanning before? Or know something about it? Okay, yeah, so we got there. Yeah. Yeah, thanks. It's a lot better. So basically today, the outline of our presentation is listed here. I'll give a brief introduction to the MRI suite for those people who have never been into the MRI suite before. So this is like a tour, guided tours in. I'll talk about the floor layout because there are like several rooms inside the MRI suite. And inside each room, what are the key components there? And also some available interactive controls that you have inside each room. And so like one day if you got parachuted into an MRI suite, you know which button to push and which button not to push. And after that, I just conduct a virtual MRI scan on this computer here, on this laptop here. So this is a picture I stole from Peter Ling's blog website. By the way, he had a pretty excellent blog talking about the details, some little tricks, and there's some MRI basics stuff, and which is pretty interesting to check out. And no, he's based in Hong Kong. He's an MRI technologist. I just Googled, all the MRI suite layouts, and this is the best one. And so basically, there are three components for MRI suite. The top part is the control room where the technicians are sitting at when they're taking pictures. And it has computers, and there's some control system, and I'll go into details later. And the central part is the most important part and most expensive part of MRI scanning. The scanner, the actual scanner sits here. Also, in addition, there are some storage for coils and lenses and other supply stuff. And there's a back room here. It's called MRI system control component room. That room is usually only accessible towards technicians. And inside this room, there are RF amplifiers, all the electronic stuff related to it, and there are some electronic boards and connections. And there also the heating cooling system is installed here as well and connected to the middle room. So this is, I want to put some extra emphasis on the MRI scanning room because this one is where the dangers or accidents mostly occur. Just take a look at the, in the past few years, we had some accidents, here and there all over the world. Usually it involves some ferromagnetic items flying inside the MRI magnetic bore, and which sometimes may even incur like injury, but most of the time it's just, like the machine's damaged. So that's why this room is so important. And usually both security concerns are put into like how to make this room safe and at the same time accessible to patients. So in order to do this, we got a RF shielded door, which is here. So we should swing out and away from the control center. And usually on this door, there's a big sign that says actually do not come close, because there's strong magnetic field in it. And as soon as you see this sign, you should take out all your cell phones, keys, all the credit cards, if you don't want it to be flying into the magnetic bore. And at the same time, patients with pacemakers or other metal implants should be avoided, going even near to this site. Inside the MRI room, the major thing is the scanner. And on both sides, there are like symmetrical two panels. Those are the control panels for the scanner. Basically, these control panels control the motion of the patient bed, this bed here, how it slides in and at which speed. And as well, there are three lights here, which controls the alignment of the center of the magnetic ball with the center of the region of interest. So once we get these, we set these slides on and we align the landmark with the center of the magnetic board. So, and in this way, we can make sure that the image that we are getting is from the part that we are interested in. And this one is the head coil. Usually, there are many different types of coil. There are thousands of, and the numbers still keep growing because all the commercial companies want to make money actually using fancier coils. But basically, for my experiment, I use the head coil here, which is connected. It's their external component, which is connected through the backside here to the actual magnetic board. And sometimes, if the imaging object is bigger than the head, so you just get rid of this head coil altogether, because there is an embedded body coil, this layer here, it's a body coil, which is similar to the head coil, just the size is a lot bigger, but the SNR is not as comparable. So, and the patient position and those things, we'll talk about how patient was lying onto the patient bed and sliding to this magnetic ball later. And so that's all for the MRI scanning room. So the MRI control room, which is the front part, contains some interesting components. So this is a picture I took from Sunnybrook Hospital. This is the MRI control room that is actually I work with on a daily basis. And first of all, the workstation monitor. And second one, the host computer monitor, this one here, and of course the CD and MOD tower, because the most direct way to get images from this computer, from this system here, is to just bring your own CD and burn it. Otherwise, you have to go through a very complicated network of system, try to transfer the DICOM files from the computer here to the centralized storage system, and then download from there, which is a lot more complicated. DICOM files. That's the standard file format for medical images. Yeah, it's kind of like JPEG, but with some fancier header attached to the header part. And by the way, if you guys have any questions, just feel free to interrupt. And yeah, so yeah. Yes. Yeah, pretty much radiologists sitting in with this room, and sometimes MR technician has to go back to the back room, but radiologists rarely go there because all the control system can be prescribed here. And this room actually also has less magnetic field influence. So, you know, you can see my cameras here and the car keys here, and nothing's damaged so far. Yeah. So, and your keyboard and mouse, it is kind of like normal stuff, but the keyboard is slightly different. Also, for this system here, inside the MR control room, we got speakers and microphone. That's not for karaoke or any kind of like phone conversation. It's to communicate between here and the patients inside the magnetic board. Because once the scanning started, it's really noisy, and because we got this constant RF clicking sound there. So especially when we were doing some functional MRI experiments, we also use the microphone and speaker system to try to deliver instructions and tasks for patients for patients to carry out inside the bowl. A gradient. Actually, both. RF agreed and they create two different sounds. So actually, it's kind of like a symphony toward the end. Yeah. And we also got a cardiac monitoring system, which is this one here. So in case we try to do synchronized imaging, because try to get rid of the motion artifacts from cardiac imaging, we need to use this system to control the heartbeat. And also the host computer. Unfortunately, it's not here. It's not shown here. It's right underneath this table. That's the heart of the MRI control system. And basically, it just looks like a regular computer, only like a lot more expensive. And at the same time, your power control just as regular computers, the power and reset. But in terms of when some emergency happens, you can turn off the power here and try to stop the scan from continuing. And you can also reset it. But at the same time, keep in mind that this computer here only controls the power to the system electronics, which means once we press this button or we unplug the power supply to this thing, the MRI itself has stopped. But at the same time, the magnetic field is still there. That magnetic field is a static magnetic field, very strong one, and it doesn't turn on and off just by this computer here.
How
1.5 Tesla.
How many?
50,000. Yeah.
So this does control the gradient coils
and the RF? Yeah, the gradient coils and the RF. As well as the sequence generators, pulse sequence generators. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. We can turn it off, but once it's off, it's really hard to restart the whole thing again. So we need to call GE technicians just to turn on the static B1, B0. And the system there is purely physical. So we have to vent all the helium fluid from the coil, because the system, because the mechanism behind the static B1 field is helium cooling down the coil to make it superconductive, so as to create the strong magnetic field. Yeah. So this is the keyboard, the fancier keyboard I mentioned before. In addition to the regular keyboard thing, we got some controls here. The emergency stop. Yeah, because patient safety is always our biggest concern. So we got about 10 different ways to stop the bed from going in and from stop the scanning from continuing. So this is one of them. And there the operation speaker and volume thing control here. Patient volume and the press to talk, so you can start a conversation with the patient. We use this board here. And your start scan, this button is never rarely used because we got a soft button on the interactive GUI system. And your pause and stop and move to scan, stop moving, and this one's inactive. I try to play around with it, but nothing happened so far. Yeah. Yeah, so let's move on to room number 3. That's the MRI system component room. So basically, you can see from this side, these are all the amplifiers, gradient amplifiers and RF amplifiers, the control system here, all the electronic stuff. And also, because the RF inside the MRI room and the RF amplifiers here need to be connected, but somehow isolated, because we don't want too strong RF interference from this room going into the actual MRI scanner. So we use the penetration panel, this thing here, and we use this panel to lead only a limited amount of cables between these two rooms. So toward the end, we are able to create RF excitations as well as all the gradients without introducing too much RF interference into the room. Okay, let's start scanning. Pretend now we have a patient who's waiting to be scanned. So we decided to do a two-step mock scan. The first one is to do the localizer sequence. This is a sort of like a jargon term. Basically, it is a very fast but low-resolution sequence. Scan three different planes, so to get the rough anatomical information about the patient or the imaging subject. And then we can use that information to assist prescribing the imaging slices that we are interested in. And once the localizer sequence is done, we'll continue to the spin echo sequence part. It is a lot slower, but with very high resolution. And we are able to image the fine anatomical details of the subject. And I'm not too sure how many of you guys here know the term anatomical image and pathological image. In that case, I will just skip the details here and just say that we're trying to do the T1 weighted image instead of T2 weighted. Yes, pretty much. T2 is more, because we're talking about, the example here is about brain imaging, so T2 is more sensitive to the fluid concentration and stuff, which is more pathology related, and T1 is more related to the tissue itself, white and gray matter. So the first thing you see is this image here. This is the GUI desktop that we see. And there basically there are six buttons on the top, and they're each of them representing actually a management tool. The first one is called scan management. Right now it's idle because it's not scanning. And the second one is called protocol management. The second one's here. Basically, it creates a series of parameters that that is used for some certain purpose scan. So, for example, standard functional MRI scan, you can just pull from a protocol, existing protocol here, press this button and pull an existing protocol, and save you the trouble of entering parameters yourself. And the third one is the image display. So, all the patients scan here. You get access to this to the scan image from this button here. And the third one is called the image management. So basically all the DICOM files, DICOM is the standard format image medical files, can be translated through this computer, through this scanner here, into the centralized storage system. And then later you can go to that storage system and download from there. This is the standard way of hospitals storing patient information. And this one's the services. So basically anything that doesn't fit in the first four categories just goes here. The C-shell, the raw file management system, etc. And there's the last one is the inside interactive service. Basically means there is a GE person, if you press a button, and who is ready to solve your problems, but never happened. So I think this one's inactive as well. Yeah. So once we know actually these six buttons are four, so let's go to like new patient. The first thing that comes up is the patient information. Actually, this panel comes up first. So you just enter all the information. Pretty much patient ID and patient name is the only thing you needed at this point. And just keep in mind, because DICOM has a very fancy header, so anything entered here will be recorded later into the DICOM header. So it's kind of useful for you to like put in more information, just so like 2 years from now, when you open up the DICOM file, you still know actually what that patient is and what kind of conditions like he's been through. And also, there's a very important thing here. It's the patient weight. They don't care about the age and stuff, but the weight is very closely related to some safety concerns. So patient weight need to be entered no matter what. And once you enter patient wait, the next step, the window will just pop up here, which is the exam DBDT and star limits. These are the safety regulations related to MRI scanning. This is very important. So unless you press a button here, accept, otherwise you're not able to proceed with the scan. Basically, there are three levels, the normal DBDT and normal SAR, which is the clinical mode. So everyone's safe in this mode. And the first level DBDT and first level SAR, which means now you're into research mode and you can do crazy stuff about it. But at the same time, the gradient field is still limited to a very strict limitation. So to protect the patient or the phantom that you're using. Oh, by the way, phantom is some kind of like mock patients, so they got similar tissues. Yeah. Do you have any questions here? Phantom is some kind of like box or acrylic thin, so you fill in saline or fill in gel just to make it kind of similar to a patient, but not the actual patient. So first level DBDT and first level SAR will be safe for phantoms and patients. And second level used to be accessible for regular researchers, but right now because of the safety concerns, it is no longer available. So pretty much the second level DBDT is disabled. So pretty much under second level DBDT, you can do anything. And as long as it doesn't exceed the hardware limitations. But at the same time, you might burn your patient like very badly if you don't pay attention and if you don't do your homework properly before the scan. So anyways, right now, in many scanner situations, yes. No, not at this point. The thing is, you have to apply for a special permit, right? And at the same time, get a password from it. So if you press second level SAR, the first thing is it'll pop up for an interactive window, like password entered and stuff. And they don't give this permission to anyone at this point. Yeah. Okay, so once you're happy with... No, sorry. Yeah, pretty much done here. So, and one thing to point out is these limitations are computed from the weight that you entered. So if you enter like higher weight, the limitations will be a lot more a lot less strict. And yeah, so because star is computed by like watts per kilogram. So and so we just accept the limits here. And realizing the fact we cannot use level 2, but we'll be happy with level 1 at this point. Then go to patient position. Patient position, we have four options, supine, prone, left decubitus, and right decubitus. And regularly, we just use supine unless in some situations, the region of interest will be not aligned, cannot be aligned with the center of the magnetic bore using the first position. In that case, we'll go for the next three here. And patient entry is like head first. Then we can choose whatever coil you want to use. And as I said, there are like each category, there are like 20 different ones. And those are only the standard clinical one available for GE machines. If you multiply this by different brands, GE, Siemens, and Philips, and the number of coils will be like thousands of different types. And right now we are happy with the head coil because it's already connected. And then we go to, we skip the series description part, leave this one blank, because this is just a note of additional space for you to record the patient information or your experiment information. It is not required for at this point. And so we decided to go with three planes. This is axial, this plane here, and this is sagittal, and this one's coronal. So these are perpendicular, three slices perpendicular to each other. And oh yeah, I forgot to ask you which kind of mode is preferred, but yeah. So we use 2D mode, so we get 3D images from it. And then we choose the pulse sequences that we want to use. We got a whole selection here. And But normally, actually, for 3D localizer, we don't need to go to this page, because as soon as the three plan imaging parameter is specified, it will automatically choose the localizer here. But anyways, it's fun to look at all these different sequences and know your options. Then we go to image options, which is on top of the image sequences. We still got some options about what type of excitation scheme that we want to use and stuff. For example, acid means parallel imaging, and blood suppression means all the images that you got, the blood will be black and the fat tissue will be white, which will be very nice for vascular imaging because the blood disappeared in the image. And you can play around with all these options here. But for now, because we are just doing a very basic 3D localizer thing, so none is required. And enter this. This part is automatically filled, and you can start scanning, like by pressing the save scan, save series, and then start scan. And notice, like, and please note, there are four different options here: auto pre-scan, manual pre-scan, prep scan, and scan. And basically, these two are talking about the pre-scan part, and this one only uses when we're using. DTI imaging, for example, some specific imaging sequence. So the auto pre-scan and manual pre-scan, they're basically doing the same thing. They set the standard frequency, and or they adjust the receive gain and transmit gain. If we press this manual pre-scan pop button here, the first thing is it will adjust the standard frequency for you. And you have to manually enter the standard frequency that you want to use, as well as use this slider here, sliding bar here, to apply the delta frequency to it, so that in the end, the AX, the standard frequency, will be at the peak of this energy transfer. And the second adjustment is the transmit gain here, TG. TG is to make sure that if we decide, you know, we need to flip the photons 90 degrees, it will be precisely 90 degrees. So this is a calibration for the flip angles. And the third part is the receive gain. Receive gain is slightly more complicated because it has two parameters here. One is called the analog gain, and the other one is called digital gain. And there is a final number, TR, is the combination of these two. Basically, the combinational effect of receive gain is to make sure that the analog to digital conversion will be optimized. So the end result will be this peak is high enough, almost reaches the ceiling, but at the same time, it's not cropped. So that's the goal of this adjustment. Just to help you guys understand this a little bit more, so we have this image here, which I got from the GE educational website, and this image is not ideal because it has a very obvious artifact on it. Interestingly, two images are different. Yeah, this one's yellower, but they're the same thing. Okay, so just take a wild guess. Which parameter should be adjusted in order to get this get rid of the artifacts? We can see some hint here is the white part here is very flat. There's no details in it, and the black part is very flat too. There's no details in it. The ideal thing should be like something like should be like this with structures and details inside. So you got three options: sender frequency, transmit gain, and receive gain. Who's into sender frequency? Who's voting for sender frequency? No one? Okay, good. So that's gone. And I think this one here is the actual problem, because the receive gain is too narrow. So actually they cropped out the top part and the bottom part. So the dark area has no details, and the white area has no details. So in this case, if you see this kind of image, like two-tone image, better to go with go back and adjust the receive gain a little bit. Is there a knee? Yeah, here. So it's got some kind of like bone tissue and cartilage stuff inside. And yes. Okay, so we're done with the localizer part, and this is the actual 3D image that we're looking at. Sorry, actually not the 3D image, but the spin echo sequence that we're looking at. Similarly to the previous one, we do the same head first, supine, all those kind of prescriptions here. But at the same time, we need to choose this time the spin echo instead of localizer. And we want to do an axial image with 3D, with 2D slices towards the end. And once we are happy with this, we need to put in a lot more parameters compared to before, because the 3D localizer and 3D localizer is a simplified version of the imaging sequence. So the TE, TR, all those information is already pre-filled. And for the actual spin echo, you need to decide all these numbers yourself. As I said before, this time we are aiming to get a T1 weighted image, the anatomical information of the brain. Therefore, we put in these numbers here. And if you are looking for like pathological image and stuff, you can put in totally different parameters. Just play with it. And the frequency and phase encoding will decide the resolution of the image that you're getting. You can go fancier, you can go higher, like 512, or even sometimes 1028, or something like 24, or something like that. But at the same time, if you increase the frequency encoding, phase encoding too much, the noise will be overwhelming, and you'll get a very grainy image. So usually we go with we don't go below 1 millimeter squared for the voxel size, just to get the optimal image quality. Yes, and also we have more options about the assets, the parallel imaging, and blood suppression stuff. Just to save some time, because the bigger the angle is, the longer the imaging sequence is. And but this one is very not optimized. So if we go like very small flip angles, the SNR wouldn't be so perfect. Yeah, so it's sort of like trade-off. It's either 80 or 70 or 75, doesn't matter that much. Yeah. Yeah. So okay, sorry. Actually, once you get anyways, this one shows, right? I think it's once you got all the numbers here correct, and you just press this graphic RX, so that'll enter into a different graphic interface system where you can prescribe what kind of slice you wanna do for the MRI scanner. Right now we are using standard slice, and there are these three images here that we have is from the 3D localizer image, three plane localizer image. Okay, and I think after that we just save the scan, save the series, and download the series sequence, and press the scan just like before, and it'll be done. One last thing before I finish is if we got some system breakdowns and freeze, which happens a lot in GE systems, don't panic because there's always several last resorts here. One is go to the, let me see, go to this one here and press the, press the system restart and restart the whole system. That's one way. Keep in mind that way actually the static field is still there. And if there's going to be a warning, but just ignore it and press OK. And if, even if this one's not working, you can go to this button here and do something there and close the shut the whole entire system down. And I guess pretty much that's it. So next time, if you're inside the MRI room and you decide to play around with it, and I think I should just follow these steps here, you wouldn't be able to damage anything. So you'll get some decent images for sure. Yeah, have fun. I think the technician is more helpful when there's a problem with the machine itself, and because for clinical uses, I assume you're talking about clinical applications. Just have a patient and want to get some image. Usually, they just pull from a series of stack sequences, so they don't improvise like on the spot to get a different setting and different combination because everything is tried and tested like many times before, right? And the technician is very useful because pretty much all the stuff in the docs room, in the back, the equipment room, nobody's allowed to touch it or except the technicians. And in that case, anything, even if a cable just got disconnected, they need to be summoned and deal with it. Yeah. And and at the same time, if you are talking about MRI research, like sequence developing and stuff, technicians are very good because they know a lot about the sequence programming tricks. So that's the same sequence, basically the same diagram, but if it's programmed properly or with some more expertise, the image quality will be better. That part, some MRI programming expertise will be very helpful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How long does it take for you to do so? Then to play a picture after you press the scan button?
The whole system, it depends on the sequence that you're running, right? For example, the 3D localizing sequence is like 2.4 seconds or something. It will be like super fast. But at the same time, MRI has been criticized, constantly by other imaging modality people, saying like it's a bit slower, and a DTI image might cost like 10 minutes, and some of the specialized sequence might take even 30 minutes or something, yeah, or depends. But at the same time, GE has updated their image, their system, so that even in the middle of an imaging session, the images are constantly updated. So as soon as you got an image, it will show right away. And despite actually like there are 2,000 images need to be scanned before by the end of the scan. Yeah.
So if you go in there, you can get as good a picture as the usual radiologist picture?
Yes, if I just use the usual radiologist protocol, which is always pre-stored there. Yeah. Yes. So the purpose for this protocol management then, yeah, which is very important and helpful, is to standardize everything. So next time actually you take a look at the DICOM image, and just by looking at the header part and know which protocol you're using, you pretty much knows the parameters and all the little details about this imaging sequence. I think that's a very useful way to standardize and eliminate errors during the transaction. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Okay.